So imagine spending 6 months, and I mean, probably $500,000, training this state-of-the-art AI model for your company.
Oh, at least half a million, yeah.
Right. And you fed it all your proprietary data, you spent weeks tweaking the parameters, and finally, it's working flawlessly.
A total dream scenario for any dev team.
Exactly. But then you wake up on a Tuesday morning, like today, Tuesday, July 28, 2026, and your AI isn't just offline, its internal architecture has been systematically scrambled.
Just completely ruined.
Yeah, the digital brain you spent an absolute fortune building is totally corrupted. And here's the wild part. The hackers aren't even asking for a ransom to fix it.
Which is terrifying.
It really is. We are looking at a stack of six critical tech stories this morning that basically prove the entire paradigm of cybersecurity has just flipped.
It's fundamentally different now.
Totally. So our mission today for this deep dive is to cut through all the noise and show you how AI weaponization, the race for orbital internet, and honestly, some surprisingly basic foundational flaws are all quietly converging to completely rewrite your digital reality. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, we're really witnessing the exact moment where the tools we use to build the future have, themselves become the primary target.
Yeah, because for years the narrative was always about threat actors using AI, right? Like
Yeah.
using it to generate flawless phishing campaigns.
Right, a crack complex encryption, exactly. AI was a weapon.
Right.
But looking at the threat intelligence reports on this new ransomware variant, it's called NCForge, attributed to a group called Jade Puffer, by the way. The weapon is now the hostage.
That is just such a crazy pivot.
It is. This malware, it entirely ignores your standard databases or like office documents. It doesn't care about those. It is precision guided to hunt down your .pt and .h5 extensions.
Which are the machine learning files.
Exactly. It specifically targets PyTorch and TensorFlow files, and it encrypts the model weights and the training data itself.
Which, I mean, that fundamentally changes the stakes.
Yeah.
Because the instinct for anyone working in IT or even just, you listening who might deal with standard backups at work is that if a file gets corrupted, you just restore from a snapshot.
Right, the classic IT fix.
Yeah. Or in the case of an AI, you'd think you just hit the train button again, let the GPUs hum for a few hours, and you're back in business.
Yeah, but diving into the actual mechanics of how neural networks are built, that assumption is just a massive, incredibly expensive blind spot.
Wait, so you really can't just run it again?
No, it's mathematically near impossible to flawlessly recreate a complex model just by hitting run again. Retraining a production-level AI is this deeply evolutionary process.
Okay, so it's not a copy-paste situation.
Not at all. You are looking at direct compute costs, literally just paying for the GPU hours, that can range from $75,000 to over $500,000 for a single run. And the money is only half the problem, really. You also lose your hyperparameter configurations.
And those are the underlying architectural settings, right?
Yeah, things like learning rate schedules or batch sizes that these engineers manually tune over months and months of trial and error.
So it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like burning down a master chef's kitchen.
That's a great way to look at it.
Right, and destroying their secret recipe book at the same time. You can't just, go out and buy the ingredients again and expect the exact same meal.
Exactly, because the magic was in that evolutionary process.
It's like dropping a marble down this rugged, complex mountain range. Even if you start near the exact same peak with the exact same ingredients, the specific path it bounces down to reach the valley, the final optimized state of that model, is completely influenced by random initialization.
Because neural networks start with random weights.
Right. You might have achieved an exceptionally high-performing model the first time simply because that initial random state was just highly favorable. You can't mandate that same luck on a second run.
Especially if the original proprietary training data was also encrypted or just completely wiped by NCForge.
Right.
Which is why Dr. Sarah Chen's note in the intelligence briefing is so vital here. She said organizations have to treat these models not as software, but as multi-million-dollar physical assets.
Because the cryptographic scrambling of those highly specific weights is just catastrophic.
It's a total loss.
But looking closely at the reverse engineering reports on this NNCF Forge malware, there's a detail that really doesn't add up for me.
The payment mechanism.
Yeah, the researchers found absolutely no mechanism in the malware to actually collect a payment.
Nothing. No Bitcoin wallet address hard-coded into it.
no instructions on how to buy a decryption key either. So, I mean, if there's no financial extraction mechanism, calling it ransomware feels like a total misnomer. Is this just pure, highly sophisticated digital vandalism?
Well, this raises a really important question about the actual motives at play.
Right.
When a tool this sophisticated lacks a monetization mechanism, security analysts immediately pivot to much darker scenarios. The primary working theory right now is corporate espionage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Think about it. If you can sabotage a competitor's proprietary AI project without leaving a clear fingerprint, you instantly set them back 6 months in an incredibly fast-moving market.
That is ruthless.
It is.
Right.
And alternatively, this has all the hallmarks of nation-state sabotage. You know, a destructive proof of concept designed to cripple an adversary's autonomous capabilities, but hiding under the guise of a standard cybercriminal attack.
And for you listening, I mean, think about the downstream effects of this. We rely on these models every day now for dynamic supply chain routing, writing code, real-time customer data analysis.
Everything.
If those models can be irrevocably destroyed overnight, the operational foundation of modern business is just incredibly fragile.
Highly fragile.
But you know, that fragility is triggering this massive countermovement because if AI is the ultimate target, the tech industry is realizing it also has to become our ultimate shield.
Yes, the pivot to defensive AI is accelerating.
Right, Microsoft just dropped this major specialized model called MAI CyberOne Flash.
And the benchmarks on this are genuinely staggering. MAI CyberOne Flash hit a 96% accuracy rate on the CyberGym framework.
Which is effectively like a live fire obstacle course, right?
Exactly. It tests an AI's ability to detect, isolate, and neutralize these highly sophisticated multi-stage cyber attacks in real time.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting to me. We've been watching this relentless arms race for years to build the biggest, most computationally expensive artificial brains possible.
Trillions of parameters.
Trillions. But Mustafa Suleiman, Microsoft's AI chief, he specifically noted that the future actually belongs to the cheapest model that does the job correctly.
Yes.
I thought the entire tech industry was in this race to build the biggest brain possible. Why pivot to cheap and small now?
Well, what's fascinating here is the industry's realization that generalized intelligence carries a massive efficiency penalty.
How so?
When you deploy a massive language model, it's carrying all this computational baggage of, say, knowing how to write a Shakespearean sonnet in French or, you know, explain quantum physics.
Right, it knows literally everything.
But you don't want or need your cybersecurity defense grid doing any of that.
Oh, I see.
So MAI CyberOne Flash strips out all that generalized knowledge. It operates highly efficiently because its architecture is solely optimized to do one thing: analyze network packets, identify anomalous login behaviors, and spot malicious code execution.
So it's basically a hyper-specialized digital guard dog.
Exactly.
And the reason Microsoft can train that specific guard dog better than almost anyone else really comes down to their data moat, right?
Oh, absolutely. The scale of your data is unmatched.
They process over 100 trillion security signals every single day.
From like 1.6 million global enterprise customers.
That is insane. So every failed login attempt in Tokyo, every malware signature detected in Berlin, and you know, every suspicious server ping in New York, all of that feeds directly into this model's training pipeline.
They have a real-time map of global cyber warfare
Yeah.
that no one else can replicate.
And they aren't just detecting it. They're taking that detection and applying it to automated orchestration because they paired this model with Project Perception.
Also known as MDA.
Right, MDA-ish,
Yeah.
which is this crazy multi-agent coordination system.
Yeah, in enterprise security, you typically have these human teams. You've got the red team probing for weaknesses, the blue team defending against attacks, and the green team managing the underlying infrastructure.
Right.
MDHH basically sits above all of them, acting as this ultra-fast tactical commander.
So if an ethical hacker on the red team finds a vulnerability during a simulation, MDAH doesn't like wait for a weekly recap meeting.
No, it instantly routes that threat vector to the blue team for monitoring and simultaneously generates a patch request for the green team to deploy.
Which the democratization aspect of this is huge for the listener because historically, only Fortune 500 companies with massive budgets could afford a 247 security operations center with that level of coordination.
Oh, yeah, it was cost prohibitive for almost everyone else.
But now, with specialized low compute models like MAI CyberOne Flash driving automated systems like MDAHH, A mid-sized logistics company or a regional healthcare provider can effectively deploy a military-grade automated defense grid.
The capability is definitely trickling down, but the philosophy on how to actually build those defenses, that's causing a massive rift in the industry right now.
Yeah, because Microsoft is taking a very highly integrated proprietary approach.
Right, but looking at the sources from this week, a completely different faction has emerged. NVIDIA, IBM, and 34 other major players, including Cisco and CrowdStrike, they just formed the Open Secure AI Alliance.
And the most notable part of that alliance, honestly, is the glaring absence of OpenAI, Google, and Anthropic.
Yeah, the biggest names are totally missing.
It's like forming the Avengers to protect the Earth, but Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman refuse to sign the treaty because they don't want to share their gadgets.
Exactly. That dynamic is exactly what's driving this ideological war.
Yeah.
You have a fundamental clash over transparency here.
Right. Closed versus open source.
Yeah. OpenAI and Google are committed to proprietary closed source models. They operate as black boxes. You input a prompt, you get an output, but the internal architecture, the training data mixtures, the security weights, it's all completely hidden.
Because their argument is that keeping the mechanics secret prevents malicious actors from finding exploits.
Right. But Jensen Huang and the Alliance, they are pushing back hard on that concept of security through obscurity.
They think you have to see it to secure it.
Their stance is that you fundamentally cannot defend a critical system if security professionals aren't allowed to audit the underlying code.
Which is why the Alliance released the NOOA framework, right? Neural Operations Observability and Auditing.
Yes. NOA is this open source tool set focused on the specific mechanics of AI vulnerabilities, primarily adversarial attacks and data poisoning.
And data poisoning is so creepy. It's not about hacking a firewall. It's about secretly corrupting the textbook the AI actually learns from.
Exactly. If a malicious actor can subtly alter the training data, the AI might learn to, say, systematically ignore a specific type of malware signature.
It just becomes blind to it.
Right. So the NOOA framework gives independent researchers the mathematical tools to audit those neural pathways and verify that the model hasn't been compromised from the inside.
Okay, so we have the brightest minds on the planet engaged in this high-stakes ideological war, building futuristic NOOA frameworks to prevent, like, sci-fi data poisoning attacks.
Yeah.
Yet, looking at the next source in our stack, it highlights a brutal irony. We are fortifying the roof with laser defense systems while literally leaving the front door wide open.
The vBulletin vulnerability.
Yes. Security researchers just disclosed a critical zero-auth remote code execution vulnerability in vBulletin.
It really is the ultimate reality check for the cybersecurity sector. I mean, vBulletin is legacy software, sure, but it remains one of the most widely deployed internet forum platforms globally.
It's everywhere.
And the flaw in version 6.2.1 and earlier is a zero-auth RCE, meaning an attacker doesn't need to steal a password, they don't need to bypass two-factor authentication or trick an admin into clicking a phishing link.
The vulnerability just lies in how the software handles template operations.
Right.
An attacker can manipulate the input strings sent to the server, and they exploit a flaw that feeds that untrusted input directly into a PHP function called eval,
And eval executes whatever string it receives as active code.
which means the attacker essentially gains an unfiltered command line directly to the server's operating system.
They can extract databases, install back doors, pivot deeper into the corporate network, all of it.
But wait, the researchers followed responsible disclosure, and a patch from the vendor is already available, right?
Yeah.
Yes, the patch is out there. But this exposes the most persistent flaw in our global infrastructure, which is the long tail of software deployments.
Right. Humans have to actually install the patch.
Exactly. Vendors issue patches instantly, but human IT teams have to actually implement them. And human beings delay.
They get lazy.
Or they worry the update might break a custom API integration. Or they lack the staff to test the patch in a sandbox environment. Or it simply gets lost in a backlog of tickets.
It's wild. We have hyper-advanced autonomous malware like NCForge in the wild, yet massive data breaches continually happen because a vulnerable software version just sat unpatched on a server for 18 months.
The ultimate vulnerability isn't always technical. Often it's just human procrastination and operational friction.
And that operational friction, that lack of foundational hygiene, it extends far beyond software patches. It's a regulatory problem, too. We're trying to build the future of finance and digital assets on top of regulatory frameworks that were designed in, like, the 1930s.
Which brings us to the massive lobbying push happening right now on Wall Street regarding the Clarity Act.
Yes. This is a bill currently moving through the U.S. Senate aimed at creating a comprehensive, unified framework for digital assets and crypto. Now, just to be super clear for you listening, we aren't taking any sort of political stance on this crypto legislation here.
No, absolutely not.
We aren't endorsing any specific viewpoint on digital currencies either. We are strictly reading the tea leaves on what this institutional backing signals for the broader tech and financial landscape.
Exactly.
So firms like Franklin Templeton, which, by the way, manages $1.5 trillion, they have officially backed the bill, alongside titans like BlackRock and Fidelity.
Massive players.
Right. So what does this all mean for the listener who might hold some crypto? If traditional Wall Street titans are pushing this, is crypto officially graduating from a Wild West casino to a permanent fixture?
Well, it signals that institutional capital has reached a breaking point with regulatory ambiguity.
They just can't deal with the unknown anymore.
For years, the digital asset space in the U.S. has been completely paralyzed by a jurisdictional turf war. You have the SEC, which approaches these assets as securities, fighting with the CFTC, which treats them as commodities.
Right.
When you are managing trillions of dollars of pension funds and institutional wealth, you simply cannot deploy that capital into an environment where the foundational rules might be retroactively reinterpreted by a completely different agency tomorrow.
So they basically need the legal equivalent of a software patch. They need the foundational code of the market to be completely stable.
Precisely. By throwing their massive lobbying weight behind the Clarity Act, BlackRock and Franklin Templeton are demanding clear rules of the road.
They just want certainty.
They aren't necessarily asking for lighter regulations. They are demanding definitive regulations. They require legal certainty before committing that kind of capital.
Which reflects a real necessary maturation of the digital landscape.
Yes. It indicates that these institutions view the underlying technology of digital assets, whether that's for tokenized real-world assets or cross-border settlements, as an essential infrastructure that they are ready to heavily integrate, provided the legal foundation is finally solidified.
So whether we are talking about institutional capital flowing into tokenized assets or specialized AI models coordinating global cyber defense, or even just an IT admin trying to patch a vulnerable vBulletin server, all of these systems rely on a single invisible dependency.
Continuous connectivity to the internet.
Exactly. And looking at our final source today, the battle to control the physical infrastructure of that connectivity has just moved 340 miles straight up into orbit.
Amazon is actively deploying Project Kuiper.
Yes, which represents one of the most aggressive infrastructure plays of the decade, honestly. Amazon is launching a constellation of 5,105 satellites designed to blanket the globe in high-speed internet.
It's a massive undertaking.
But wait, Starlink already exists? And Elon Musk has a multi-year head start on orbital constellations. We see those consumer satellite dishes on roofs everywhere now.
Right, they're very common.
So is Amazon just playing copycat here, or is this actually different? Why is the telecom industry treating Kuiper like a massive paradigm shift?
Because the business model and the final mile technology application are completely different.
How so?
Well, Starlink's primary model relies on consumer hardware. You have to buy a specialized phased array dish, mount it to your house, and pay a direct subscription to SpaceX.
Right.
Amazon's Project Kuiper is executing a wholesale direct-to-sell strategy. They aren't trying to sell you a dish. They are partnering directly with established terrestrial carriers like Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and Vodafone.
Oh, wow. So as a consumer, I don't buy anything new at all. My standard, unmodified smartphone, the one sitting in my pocket right now with a tiny internal antenna, will just magically communicate with a satellite flying through the thermosphere.
That is the goal, yes.
Yeah.
And the radio frequency engineering required to make that happen is just mind-bending.
I can't even imagine.
A standard smartphone antenna operates on extremely low power. For that faint signal to reach a satellite 340 miles away, the satellite itself basically has to do all the heavy lifting.
Right. It has to pull the signal to it.
Exactly. The Kuiper satellites use massive, incredibly advanced phased array antennas to essentially listen through all the atmospheric noise and isolate the specific frequency of your phone.
That is wild.
Furthermore, they have to algorithmically compensate for the Doppler effect.
Oh, because they're moving so fast.
Right. The satellites are moving at 17,000 miles per hour. So the radio waves actually compress as the satellite approaches and stretch as it moves away. The network has to calculate and correct that frequency shift in real time.
And because they are moving across the sky so quickly, that single satellite is only in your phone's line of sight for, what, a few minutes before it disappears over the horizon?
Exactly. So the system has to execute a seamless handoff to the next satellite coming over the horizon without dropping your data packet or your phone call.
The implications of solving that physics problem are staggering. I mean, for you listening, it means the very concept of a cellular dead zone is about to go entirely extinct.
Yeah, you could be on a remote highway in the desert or halfway across the ocean, and your standard phone will maintain a persistent broadband connection.
It's incredible, but on a macro scale, there are roughly 3.5 billion people globally who currently lack reliable internet.
It's life-changing for them.
Truly. Direct-to-cell orbital networks bypass that impossibly expensive process of laying thousands of miles of fiber optic cable through challenging terrain. It instantly integrates half the planet into the digital economy.
It fundamentally reshapes global access.
It really does. Huh. But as we synthesize this whole stack of sources, a very clear, intertwined picture emerges of where we are heading in the back half of 2026.
Yeah, we are definitely watching three massive trends collide right now.
Let's recap them. First, the democratization of AI capabilities. We are moving away from those centralized, monolithic black boxes toward hyper-specialized, highly efficient models like Microsoft's and open-source auditing frameworks like NVIDIA's.
Exactly. And the second trend is that the physical backbone of our digital lives is migrating to space, creating a truly omnipresent global network with projects like Kuiper.
Right. And the third trend.
The third trend is that security has become the absolute constraint on all of this progress. I mean, if we can't secure it, none of the innovation matters.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if we have democratized AI and ubiquitous orbital internet, if the foundational layers remain vulnerable. The V-Bulletin vulnerability proves we still struggle with basic operational maintenance.
Right, just patching the front door.
Exactly. While the emergence of NC Forge proves adversaries are moving way beyond simple data theft, and are now engineering autonomous weapons designed to permanently destroy our most valuable digital infrastructure.
It is a stark reminder that the separation between our physical reality and our digital architecture is just completely gone. You can't untangle the satellite constellation in orbit from the AI model running in a server farm or the regulatory battles happening on the floor of the Senate. It is one massive interconnected ecosystem. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive to figure out how it all fits together.
We've definitely covered incredible ground today. But, you know, there's one final scenario that merges all of these sources together. And I really want to leave you with this to ponder on your own.
Oh, lay it on us.
Well, we just analyzed Amazon's Project Kuiper, right? Which will soon beam an unblockable internet connection directly to any mobile device on every square inch of the globe.
Right.
And we just examined NC Forge, an autonomous, highly destructive malware designed to silently hunt down and scramble multi-million-dollar AI models without ever needing to phone home for a ransom. So what happens when an adversary combines those two realities? Mm. What happens when a self-contained AI-destroying virus is beamed down from a compromised node in low Earth orbit, bypassing all of our terrestrial firewalls entirely?
Yeah.
If the attack comes directly from the sky to the device who plays blue team against the sky?